Campfire Stories, A Good Omens Podfic, written by Zordio Masait and read by Char. Summary, in which an old true story is told, and very good moral lessons are imparted to children in the darkness, and everyone is most certainly exactly as they seem. The first that the village heard of it was from the thing they had trapped in the circle of salt. The campers gathered around had been distracted with all of the giggles and small dramas that were endemic to prepubescence, but they quieted down with only a few jabbed elbows. The counselor waited for a moment, pushing a stick thoughtfully into the campfire, to not to lock further into the flames. They were a canny bunch, the villagers, as they needed to be, because a long time ago there weren't things like telephones or even dependable mail, and they lived a long journey from their nearest neighbors. That said, they did, in fact, have, the counselor paused, and the tone of his voice changed, neighbors. The fire crackled. A few campers shuffled dirty shoes in the dirt, but no one interrupted. That was the polite thing to call them, of course, neighbors. It didn't do to be anything but polite, right up until you couldn't. Being polite meant that certain rules were still being followed, but if one of the neighbors took offense, then the rules of hospitality no longer applied. And, well, there wasn't much that could save you if one of the neighbors was offended. The volume of the counselor's voice dropped as he spoke, not quite to a murmur. His eyes were distant. After a moment, he shook himself and gave them all a bit of a smile, rushing through the next part of the story. So, the villagers were savvy and clever and alert to even the smallest things that might cause mischief. One of the young ladies had seen something out of the corner of her eye, and although it was a dreadful waste of something so precious, she threw salt in an arc over her shoulder, and the circle held the thing so it couldn't escape. "But rude," the other counselor commented mildly. A camper hushed him sharply, then looked mortified at what they had done. Both counselors eyed them, but let it pass. Now, what the villagers knew, and you should know, was that the neighbors never lied. They could say things that walked right up to untruth and tickled its ears, but they could not state actual falsehood. The neighbors liked bargains, but gifts were a dangerous thing, since who could say what the value of it truly was in either direction? Best to be very sure what every agreement was, although some who were more brave than sensible would sometimes dare to try and gain a favor from one of them. "I wouldn't, would you?" he asked the group. There was a small chorus of mixed responses from the campers, and he let them chatter for a bit before he continued. The young lady ran for her parents to tell them, and before you would know it, half of everyone was there, all gathered around and crammed into that little hut where the young lady lived with her family. There were arguments, but the village leader took charge and offered to release the small neighbor that the young lady had captured in exchange for answers to 5 questions. The neighbor bargained them down to 3 and didn't seem angry, so they agreed. The villager asked what intentions they had for their presence in the dwelling. The neighbor answered that they had been looking for something to borrow that would shine. The villager asked why they needed or wanted something that would shine specifically from a human home. The neighbor took a long time to answer, but surprised them all by sitting down and hiding its face for a moment before it finally replied. It told them that other folk were coming soon to visit and see how the neighbors lived. The other folk were strong and of a large hill, and any humans that they ran across were quickly taken for everything they would give, and much that they wouldn't. The small neighbor had hoped, as had others of their kind, that perhaps if they could find a few tokens and trophies, that such might provide a show of wealth and prosperity, perhaps enough to distract from their quiet halls and empty cribs. The counselor paused and glanced over them all and seemed to make a judgment about age-appropriate content. What some stories still tell is how much the neighbors love children. They have few of their own, and sometimes when someone wants something very much, they steal it. This is always an awful thing to do, and even worse when one is stealing a person.
That's called kidnapping kids, and it is very illegal, and also really hard to do. The other counselor chimed in once more. The storyteller rolled his eyes, and his lips thinned.
So, the village leader asked a third question. If the visiting folk were not fooled, what would they likely to do? Now, before I tell you what the answer was, does this neighbor we have met seem scary?
There was a chorus of disagreement. The counselor nodded.
Just so. Now, others might be, but just like humans, some are nice and some are naughty. So it goes for the neighbors. The villagers were careful, but there had been many generations of mischief, but no danger where they lived. The neighbors might take a bit of bread and honey, or some milk that didn't belong to them, or tie shoelaces together. But no babies went missing, and no cattle fell sick. So, to hear of other folk who this neighbor was afraid of was perhaps not very good news. There was a murmuring, and the counselor took a moment to add another log to the fire. The neighbor told them terrible news then, he went on, once he settled back on the stump he was using as a seat. The neighbor said that they would be run out of their home, Underhill, to scavenge if they could, or be forced to pledge fealty to a new queen and obey whatever commands she gave. One of the younger campers made an unhappy noise, and the counselor nodded agreeably. The villagers agreed with you. The leader made a decision. He gave orders for a small dish of milk and honey to be brought for their guest, asked if the neighbor would be willing to stay of their own will for a conversation, and they drew a line through the salt so that the neighbor was free. The neighbor was very small and very afraid. But he took the saucer of sweet milk and scurried up to the rafter where none of the humans could reach him, and he stayed. They had a long conversation, the whole village, long into the evening and through the night. But by morning they had reached an agreement. The day after that, at sundown, all of the parents in the village waved as every child ran into the woods, each holding hands with at least one of the neighbors. There were gasps from the children gathered around the fire and a nervous shriek from one cluster of girls.
The counselor raised his finger and puffed up his chest.
And so began what the village called the Onekinder Festival. Do any of you have little brothers or sisters? He asked.
Some nodded.
Or have your parents ever been cross with you about your rooms being messy, or something of the kind?
Everyone present nodded. The counselor grinned.
Now, imagine that all of the loud and messy siblings and children were out on a trip, and you had the whole room or the whole house to yourself. Would that be fun?
There were cheers, oddly loud in the quiet of the dark woods around them. The camp cabins were just barely visible beyond the light of the campfire. The counselor clapped to regain their attention. Once they had settled, a smile could still be heard in his voice.
So, ohne Kinder means no children in the language of the village, and it meant that before many hours had passed, that all of the grown-ups were acting very silly indeed. Some just cleaned or did chores without being interrupted, or sat in the sunshine quietly, and others drank adult drinks out of dusty bottles, or went back to, take naps in the middle of the day in bed with their sweethearts, which was very lazy of them, he finished delicately.
Like a summer holiday,
one camper gasped. The storyteller gave them a loose salute.
Just so. And so everyone in the village enjoyed themselves very much. A week later, at sundown again, all of the children came back, dressed in clothing of many colors, singing new songs and holding hands with happy neighbors. All returned, all were safe, and the queen spoke to the village leader of diplomacy, and how the sound of laughter and overflowing halls of happy children had been an overwhelming show of vigor and a thriving court. The visiting folk had left, and the neighbors were safe and would be staying. The campers cheered, although they weren't as loud as they might have been. Several of them cast glances at the quietest of the group, who of all the listeners around the fire had not spoken a word. The storyteller didn't bring attention to them further. The villagers and the neighbors agreed to have the festival again next year, even if no diplomatic delegation was due. The neighbors missed the children, and the children had liked how nice and cool it was underhill away from the summer heat, where they were encouraged to run and sing and be as loud and energetic as possible as long as they wanted, and where there were always people of all shapes and sizes to play with.
Several campers' mouths opened in little O's of realization. The storyteller lifted his arms grandly.
Some of the neighbors looked like anyone you might meet. Others looked almost like animals, or who perhaps used to be animals. And others looked like nothing else that they had ever seen. And others couldn't be seen at all, only heard. Some were flowers that were once people, or hunting hounds that chased the unwavering whenever the king blew his horn, and whoever they found would either join the hunt or be eaten right up. He raised his voice dramatically, and there were some laughing screams.
Some neighbors only existed when the moon was full, or were made of light or wind, or the sound that rain makes when there is no one there to listen. Now the quiet one spoke.
I'm made of bark.
The storyteller gave him a smile.
Yes, you are.
Which is why we all had to be careful during swim time, yes? He asked the group warningly.
You remember to yell for body check whenever you want to, yeah? The other counselor growled. Drowning isn't fun. Better to body check as often as you want than to lose somebody.
Or, as we did today, send you all out in buddy pairs and when you come back, find that there was a trio.
The storyteller counselor followed Riley. A girl with long braids and a dirty shirt stuck out her chin stubbornly.
No one gets left out at camp. All campers deserve to have fun. And if being sexist or racist is wrong, then being speciest is extra wrong.
The storyteller sighed. His smile was genuine, but looked stressed.
I and Crowley agreed with you all then, and still agree now. That is why I am so proud of you all, that you made sure that no one splashed our new body.
He gets mossy, one of the boys interrupted.
The quiet one nodded creakily.
I do.
Yes, the storyteller persisted doggedly. And I am also proud of you all that you were willing to help give your extra beads and string so that we had enough for everyone for arts and crafts. And how clever you were for bringing the extra swim towel for our additional camper so that there wouldn't be any splinters left on the slide.
The campers looked around proudly and transparent, self-congratulations.
So that's why we're all going to be using twigs instead of the usual marshmallow rods today, so that no one who doesn't like metal has to touch it. The other grumpy counselor drawled.
There were screams of excitement, and he rolled his eyes before directing two campers to assist him in passing out twigs and big squishy bags of marshmallows. He passed the boxes of graham crackers to the storyteller, who guarded them and the chocolate closely. All of the counselors were experienced and knew what tended to go missing quickly. The small marshmallow roasting and assembly and eating were all just as chaotic as might be expected, and sticky-handed humans were yawning and tilting over on the half-log benches in under an hour. The storyteller counselor was using the cheap plastic tweezers out of the first aid kit to pick out bits of melted marshmallow from between the bark flakes on the front paws of the quiet camper. Counselor Crowley just ordered the others to go with their buddy pairs to wash their hands thoroughly before lights out, and threatened to eat them if they weren't all in their sleeping bags before he came to do the nightly check-in. The bark was as clean as it was going to get without water, and Crowley was gathering up trash around the seating area while the storyteller, who told everyone to call him a Xerophil, reassembled the first aid kit. The quiet camper said silently,
"Do you have someone coming to pick you up?" Crowley asked them casually. "All day campers need to get picked up by a parent or guardian. Or, if you're sleeping over, we'll find accommodations for you. Xerophil said you didn't like the crescent moon, yeah? Do we need to get you indoors?" Xerophil's head jerked up, and he faced the darkness away from the lake, where the edge of the clearing stopped rather abruptly, with only wilderness beyond. The dangerous ground and trees beyond were only held back by a low fence with a gate that one of the campers had curiously unlatched and then left open earlier that afternoon.
"They're almost here, I believe," Xerophil observed quietly.
Nearly on cue, there was a bone-scrapingly haunting howl from the deep woods. The camper jumped up as quickly as their rigid limbs would allow, but Councillor Crowley held out a hand to stop them for a moment. He held out a rolled tube of fabric. In the dimness of the dying fire, it didn't look like much, but in sunlight it was a rather garish orange.
"If you're coming back tomorrow, you should be in uniform," Crowley grunted. "Don't want you to feel left out."
The quiet camper reached out and then clasped the camp t-shirt to their wooden chest as tenderly as if it were a cloak of diamonds. They mumbled an acknowledgement that was not quite a thanks, then ran off into the dark, moving unsettlingly faster than they had been all day. The two councillors watched them almost float over the pounded dirt until they vanished beyond the scope of the firelight. Another howl echoed, fracturing into a hollow chitter that was echoed by intermittent, high-pitched wailing. There was a long pause, even after the night was quiet again. The crickets resumed their song, slowly, then altogether.
"Glad they had fun," Crowley observed eventually.
Aziraphale hummed in agreement.
"Indeed."
The fire was almost out. They would have to douse it thoroughly for safety before they checked on the campers and made sure that all of the cabins were secure.
"So," Crowley began.
His voice was hoarse, and he swallowed once. He was still facing out into the darkness.
"Did you have fun?"
Aziraphale stepped up behind him.
"I did," he answered quietly. "I found your hospitality to be flawless, even after you noticed. You're just like your great-grandfather when he was young."
Crowley swallowed again and turned. The being that asked to be called Aziraphale smiled at him. His eyes reflected blue when the firelight flickered. Crowley grinned at him. "What the hell?"
"You're good with the kids. Drinks at my cabin?"
Aziraphale's smile widened, and he giggled entirely unself-consciously.
"My dear, I would be delighted."
The End.